Hi, this is Tony Campanella.
And Nick Colico.
And we're with the Tony Campanella Band. And you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Podcast is kind of like a, it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Thank you.
Well, now it's over. You got no more time to choose. Well, now it's over. No more time to choose. You put me so far down. I got a 1 foot in the blue.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast. I'm hanging outside a Charlac pub this evening. Sitting in with me tonight is Tony Campanella and Nick Calico.
Calico.
There we go.
Yep.
Almost messed it up. these guys got a show coming up Saturday night at 1860 Saloon. Come out, hear some live music. How long you guys been doing this thing, together?
This lineup with Nick, is it, 3 years?
3.5 years,
I think. 3.5 years, he's a young man, so
yeah.
He's able to keep track of that better than me. I've been doing this thing for longer than he's been alive. Nick's been with us for about 3.5 years. And we've got Terry Melton on drums. I've been playing with Terry for probably 10 years, man, at least. I don't know exactly. Like I said, I lose count.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, we're at 1860 Saturday night. 1860 is our home away from home.
Yeah. When you just played Charlac last weekend?
Last Saturday.
Yeah. So
this is another home away from home. Yeah. I have several homes away from home.
Right. And occasionally you come out there. I don't even know what's going on out there anymore. But seen your name in Moonshine a few times, and I know.
Yeah.
I feel. I don't want to.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Yeah. Yep, right.
We will be back out in St. Charles, though.
Yeah.
Not this Friday. Friday, May 15th.
Yeah.
We're actually opening for Mike Zito out at the Bottleneck.
Oh, right.
So
on.
We're doing Devin Allman's
Friday Night Blues.
Yeah. I haven't actually made one of the Friday night one. I know there's Nikki Hill was just there. I really wanted to go to that one, but the night before Thursday I ran to Kansas City for a show to see JJ Gray and Mofro. So it was a kind of a late night, and we drove up there and drove back and had to work in the morning, and so Friday
that makes Friday night a little rough.
Yeah. I had to lay down and recoup a little bit, and I missed out on Nikki Hill, but there's been more than an Arbuckle just played there.
They've got a good lineup from what I've seen coming through. I forget what date we're doing a headline date out there. Oh, I know when it is. But I'm going to look at my calendar to make sure.
Yeah.
I think it's July 3rd. Friday, July 3rd.
Yeah.
We're headlining there.
Yeah.
Everybody will be out of town.
Yeah, well.
It's July 4th week. And if you're not out of town, come to the Bottleneck on July 3rd.
Yeah. I'm glad finally, for a place that's been called Bottleneck Blues Bar, they're finally bringing some blues in there, you know?
Yeah, that always struck me as odd.
Yeah.
That they would, purport themselves to be a blues bar and have never had a single blues band in there.
Yeah, sure.
I'm glad they're changing it.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm excited, and especially getting great blues on the other side of the river is is exciting for me. But I mean, I'm down at Broadway all the time, going to Beale and Oyster Bar and everything else. So I'll go wherever the music's at. It's just, but it's nice not having to drive as far sometimes.
Yeah, we get a lot of that feedback. A lot of St. Charles, Wentzville folks that don't want to travel downtown. You know, give them something nice and close in their backyard makes it nice and easy for everybody.
You guys also been a part of that Stevie Ray Vaughan stuff at the pageant.
The tribute. Are part of the tribute.
Yeah.
That was how many years is that?
Was it 16?
16 last, or 17? 16 or 17 years. It started out, God, the first show, the first ever, was down at Broadway Athletic Club, and it was Steve Picaro and Jimmy Lee Kennett, and I think they played in front of about 50 people. And then the next year they were planning it, and I ran into Jimmy at 1860, where I saw Jimmy most times. Mm-hmm. That's usually where our paths crossed, was 1860.
Yeah.
And he asked if I wanted to be a part of it, which I was honored. Steve and Jimmy were mentors for me, not only in actually guitar playing, but in, you know, how to be in a band and how to be a man. They helped me out a lot. Still do. But it started that first year that I did it. We were at Mississippi Nights. Great crowd. It was really an exciting evening.
Yeah.
And then we moved over to the pageant. Once the pageant opened up, and we've been at the pageant ever since. And it's usually a rockin' night.
Yeah. How many, it's usually sells out. Like, how many years has, have you guys drawn that crowd now?
Yeah, I mean, we're usually sold out or close to sold out almost every year.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, it's 2,000 people.
Yeah.
Rock stars for a night. It's a little bit different than
squeezing
playing clubs
in,
that we usually do. Yeah. You know, 1860 and Charlac and any other place we play.
Right.
You're not, you could combine all those places together and probably not get 2,000 people in
there.
Yeah, I don't know. That's, I mean, I guess, you know, it's one being that, you know, you guys play a lot and then, like, but just trying to, it's, you know, you want to get people involved and coming out, but it's like, well, we just saw you last week or whatever it is. You're going to get some of that kind of stuff. But I mean, it's sometimes it's kind of just frustrating when, you know, you're, even as a fan, like trying to, I do a lot to try to promote shows and try to get people more involved and, you know, it seems like it's hard to get people out to come out to a show sometimes. But then, like, they'll go drop $100 to go to a show at Verizon or something like that. I don't really get that. I don't know why. I try to, especially with locals, like, come out. This could be your next favorite band. You know, you never know. It's like, just because they're a local band doesn't mean they're not, you know, talented or whatever it is. A lot of the guys, you know, that they've evolved toward the world and stuff, now they just want to be home with their family, so they stay here in town and stuff and play. And it's frustrating for me. I can imagine
the music scene here is shrinking. It has been for probably the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember, I'm dating myself a little bit, but 10-15 years ago, I was playing down in Soulard, and God, there had to be 10 different venues down there that you could go and see a live band. You could go see live music and just hit every corner.
Right.
Fine?
I'm good.
So you got the Mexican.
And then slowly but surely,
bars are closing up or they're mm-hmm. they're changing their, you know, the Shanty is the latest one.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was a long time music bar, and now it's they put TVs up on the wall and yep. it's a sports bar.
I think Soulard, there's probably two or three spots. 1860s, Hammerstones, that's probably the only two that come to mind to me down yeah. that way at least.
Yeah.
And for a full blown music venue.
Grizzly Bear once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's seems like what's the Grove, there's a couple of spots there. It's kind of like Gramophone just closed as a music venue. I guess it's part time music venue now. And more of a sandwich shop, and then they opened up the Bootleg Atomic Cowboy, so like this, so like pretty much everything at Gramophone moved over to the Bootleg, and but I don't know, it's like it stinks when to see some great music places closing their doors. I mean, that's any business really, but yeah, it's just stinks when a local business dries up and has to close the doors and stuff.
The landing went the same way. I mean, when I yeah. first started playing out back in late 80s, the Landing was the spot.
Right.
That was another place that, man, there was, you probably had 15 venues down there that had live music. And you could just walk place to place.
Yeah.
And go check out great bands.
Sure.
And that kind of died out, and
yeah,
I don't, Soulard's heading that way, and
yeah, I guess I've never been to Mississippi Nights. I hear a lot of great stories. I've talked with four of the six guys from the Urge, and they all have stories of wild nights down there and stuff like that, and so there's a lot of that. Like, I missed most of that stuff at the Landing. Like, I there's a little bit going on there still, but not what it once was. And I guess like the biggest draw is I think you guys done that too. Is that Big Muddy's Blues Festival they do down there?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That's been what past 2 years we've done
two
that.
Or 3 years
on I guess it was, I don't know, a couple different local side stages was pretty cool. You know.
Yeah.
I think last year we had Wrath of Khan open, then it was us, and then Steve Picaro Band came after. So
right.
that was, you know, just a lot of familiar faces down at that same stage
sure.
the whole afternoon. So
Judy, I'll take another. Judy's here with us. Say hi, Judy.
Hi, Judy.
Judy from Charlotte
Pub.
She runs this joint.
All right.
Get up here. Spend your money.
Yeah. I like that, like, there was a little bit of, national headliner stuff, but there was also a lot of great local support for that festival. So that was great to see that Big Mike Aguirre was there and stuff. And
yeah, there was a lot of locals that were playing down there. You know, like I said, the past couple of years, that's been a, you know, good thing for us to get down there. And,
right.
you know, a lot of people, you see, even from St. Louis, you know, that haven't seen us before
sure.
come up after the show and talk, so no, that's good to see that.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened with that Blues Week thing. I know
yeah,
Big Muddy's, as far as I know, for this year is the only...
Well, Blues Week moved out to Chesterfield, right?
Last year. Yeah. I haven't heard anything about taking place this year, so...
Yeah. Well, hopefully they... I know a lot of people complained about moving it to Chesterfield just because Taste of St. Louis moved out there and that kind of stuff, but I mean, I get the why, but bringing, you know, taking business out of St. Louis, I understand that, but I feel like as promoters and stuff, it's a lot easier to put it out there with the fact that there's everything out there for you and stuff. Like, we kind of talked to John Pizzoni about, he puts on he's part of that El Monstero, and then they did that Art Hill show, and how compared to like going to the pageant and playing, like at Art Hill, they had to bring power, they had to bring fencing and security and toilets and food and everything, you know. So
that's got to be a logistical nightmare.
Yeah. So
thank you.
I mean, just like Big Muddy. They had you know, all the stage set up and everything else, all that work. So, you know, it's great when it's there, but it's also a ton of work. And when you can kind of go out to someplace like a Chesterfield Amphitheater where all the bathrooms and seating and stage and all sound and everything's already ready to go for you. But, you know, on the other hand, you're going to lose people that are in the city that don't want to go out there. And
sure.
So, I don't know.
You know, I was part of the Blues Week thing last year.
Yeah.
And it's a very cool venue. And, you know, the guys that put it together did a great job putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's killing music in the city.
Yeah.
You got to have events like that, and sure. I don't want to get on the soapbox, but...
Yeah.
It seems like the city of St. Louis sold out the music scene in St. Louis to some conglomerate in California.
That I read isn't even happening.
Yeah.
I heard that Summer Rocks Festival or whatever
both,
it was.
They failed to produce both shows this year.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a...
So listen local.
Yeah. That's my biggest message. Support your local guys. Put money in their pockets. Keep money in the community. And
broke.
Yeah.
Come on.
But yeah, I support local venues, local music, and local business, and keep our money here. And but yeah, so Tony, when did you start playing guitar? What was you?
Oh God, I was I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
And my uncle Pete, who was Nick's dad, actually.
Oh yeah.
Buddy of his up the street had an old piece of crap acoustic guitar, and he gave it to me. So I went to Grandpa Pigeon's. I bought a Mel Bay beginning guitar book, and I bought a fresh set of strings for it. And I taught myself how to string it, taught myself how to tune it, and learned some basic chords from that Mel Bay beginner guitar book.
Yeah.
And pretty much from there, it was my uncle's, his dad, Pete, my uncle Pat, my uncle Mark, just feeding me records. Listen to this. Give this guy a listen. Check this out. Take this home and listen. Check it out. And I loved it.
What kind of stuff was that?
It was old blues stuff.
Yeah.
Albert King, Albert Collins. I remember the first record that your dad gave me to take home was a little known record. It was Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, and Jeff Beck. And it was basically some, like, one-off recordings that the three of them did together. Just one guy playing rhythm guitar and one guy playing a solo. And it was all old blues stuff. And he's like, here, learn this. That's what I started on. And then, you know, Robin Trower, Hendrix, of course, Clapton. And then about 1982, my uncle Pat called me. My uncle Pat called me on a Sunday afternoon, and Pat never calls anybody.
Right.
Okay. My uncle Pat never calls anyone.
Right.
So, and I was like 13. So I'm like, why is my uncle Pat calling me on Sunday at like 5 o'clock? He was very excited. He's like, go turn on channel 9. Channel, that's like Sesame Street. What? So
Mr. Rogers,
turn it on. Watch this guy. So I went over and I turned on channel 9, and it was Stevie Ray Vaughan's first appearance on Austin City Limits. And I was blown away.
Yeah.
I was mesmerized. And, you know, I had, up to that point, I had just been kind of fumbling around, not sure, you know, what direction guitar was going to take me, and that put me on the path.
Yeah.
That's where I've been ever since.
That's another one. Man, I feel like sometimes I was born a couple years, 20 years too late. Like, I love all that stuff from late 60s, early 70s. My dad introduced me to a lot of Southern rock and stuff. I mean, I always tell, like, we never had a family vacation stuff. Like, we'd always, we never had a family vacation without Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and ZZ Top. Like, those were, like, staples in the collection that always played. And, like, I've been fortunate enough to see some of them live. I've seen ZZ Top a couple times now. I've never seen Allman Brothers, obviously, but I've seen Greg Allman. And then the... But I would have loved to have seen with Dwayne and stuff. And seen Devin Allman a bunch of times, which is still exciting for me. He's a heck of a player.
Yeah.
It would have been really cool to see, like, Stevie when he was doing his thing, or Hendrix and stuff. I mean, seeing some of those guys, like, that, like, all these guys are icons, and now, like, it would have been incredible to see those guys when they were doing it. And
I got to see Stevie 5 times?
Yeah,
including I saw him open for Huey Lewis and the News.
Oh, wow.
It's an interesting mix.
At the Checker Dome, or the Arena, or whatever they were calling it at the time. He was out on tour supporting his second record. And he was on Epic Records, and I think Huey Lewis was on Epic Records. So they threw him out on tour with Huey Lewis, and that's when Huey Lewis was... Oh, that 4 album was out, and it was huge, and, you know, he was playing arenas, and I saw Stevie Ray Vaughan. It's, you know, I see Huey Lewis, and it says with Stevie Ray Vaughan in real big
2-inch font,
and I'm like, oh, all right, I'll be there. I'm leaving after Stevie, but I'll be there. So I saw that show. I saw him a couple times at the Fox. Saw him with Greg Allman Band at the Fox. I saw him with Jeff Beck at the Fox.
Yeah.
Just some incredible shows. I saw him at the height of his drug use. I saw him after he cleaned up.
That's one thing. Like, you know, they've been doing a lot of these, like, biopics and stuff. And, like, you know, they did Johnny Cash, Walk the Line. And they did Ray with Jamie Foxx and stuff. And, like, and they always, like, there's another one. I haven't got to watch it, but they just did Hendrix one with Andre 3000.
Yeah, I don't care. And so I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't got to watch it yet, but he looked the part. Definitely, he pulled that off. But anyway, that's one thing I never really, I mean, I get that it's a Hollywood story. It's, you know, they want to sell tickets. But they always, pretty much in the movie, like, it's all about the drug use, and they're, like, you know, beating and cheating on women and all this stuff like that, all that stuff. But, like, they never show the end when they kind of, you know, then they, or not the end, but when they get through all that and they cleaned up and they turn their lives around and they actually do some good and things. And they, you know, like, with Johnny, he did a lot of, like, you know, gospel stuff and things like that. I mean, he, it wasn't always just about the drugs and alcohol and all that, but I guess that's what sells tickets, though, too. So that's.
I think it's more about, though, you know, we've, as music listeners, lovers of music, you know, we see one side of that all the time. And movies like that kind of give you, while they are dramatized, it gives you a clue as to, you know, what happens when you walk off the stage.
Yeah.
And it's, it's different.
Yeah.
People don't get to see it all the time.
Sure.
And, you know, you forsake a lot of things to play music.
Yeah.
It's expensive in many ways.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it the hardest. It's not being able to play, or how good you play, or how talented you are, or even how good your songs are. To make it, especially now, you gotta have brass balls. Be able to go out there and just, in spite of everything, keep doing it. It's tough. I look at, we're doing this show with Mike Zito, and I've known Mike for many, many years. I met him here when he was living in St. Louis, and he was playing in a kind of shitty top 40 band, top 40 cover band, rock cover band, and this is back in the early 90s. And they were playing at a 2:30 bar, and we were playing down in Soulard, and we stopped at this bar on the way back home. And I walk in and I see this kid. Well, he wasn't a kid. He's my age. We're both kids, I guess. See this guy in there, and they're playing some whatever was hot on the radio at that time, and really wasn't paying attention. And then he starts playing Hey Joe. And I literally had to turn. I had to turn around. I'm like, who in the hell is this guy?
Right.
And I was blown away. And every time I see Mike, I'm still blown away.
Sure.
He's got something. He's got many things. He's got the talent, but he's also got the wherewithal to stay out there and do it.
Yeah.
And that's how you succeed in this music business, especially today.
Yeah. I've seen him and seen Mike several times with he used to do the Royal Southern Brotherhood with mm-hmm. Devin, and I don't know if you ever got to see that show, but what it's really, especially for two guys, for him and Devin growing up in St. Louis and playing music and stuff, they tell a story about both of them working at Guitar Center.
Yep.
And then, like, so then at the end of the show, it's kind of like they do a song swap back and forth. Like, they both, like, play a look from,
they did Sweet Home Alabama, and they'd go into somebody else, would go to another Stairway to Heaven or something.
Really?
Like, yeah. It's a couple videos of it.
It's pretty fun. I mean, it makes for a good show, and but just, they act like that's what they used to do at Guitar Center, just pick a guitar and start doing some solos and stuff. And the other day I bought his, like, he had a clearance special thing going on his website. I bought his first five albums for like $25 or something like that.
Blue Room? Was that
all of them? Yeah, Blue Room, Most Wanted.
Love that record. And Most Wanted. Those were just, he was raw and just getting after it on those records.
But I mean, that's the thing. Like, so he's got those five, and then he's got all the stuff he's been putting out still. He did two albums with the Brotherhood. That guy has just been cranking out all kinds of material. I know he does, there's some cover stuff in there. I've seen him do like Little Red Corvette and stuff live, and like things like that. It's just, but I mean, for the writing too, like, he wrote that song. I think he like won like some kind of a blues award for Pearl River.
Yes.
Drawing a blank on his name. From that he wrote he in Brotherhood. Several Neville. He wrote that song with him. That's the thing I'm impressed by is the fact that he can keep that you know, creative juices going where you're just constantly writing and putting out the stuff, and you know, it
amazes me, guys like that who can do that and continue to turn out music and continue to play 200-250 shows a year.
Yeah.
And still raise a family and remain married and you know, stay clean and avoid all of the pitfalls of being a musician and being on the road. And
right.
I have the highest respect for Mike.
Sure.
Not just as a guitar player, but as a human being, because he does it right, and he's a genuine guy.
Yeah, I mean, and he steps off the stage, and he signs every person's CD, autograph, takes pictures, whatever. He does the whole thing. He's, and it comes through that he's, you know, super genuine, and that's like, that's one thing I never really got. Those guys that like seem to be bothered by their fans, you know, it's like,
somebody's paying to come see you, paying to spend drinks and buy your shit, and can't shake a hand afterwards or talk to them. Yeah,
sure. I mean, I get that, like, it's kind of the way we, the society's kind of changing now to where, like, everybody wants a selfie with you or whatever it is. You know, that's kind of that's the new autograph, is getting a selfie. And I get that, like, taking 200 pictures a night or whatever can kind of get old. But, I mean, those are the people paying, you know, your rent and everything else and all that. And,
yeah, and, you know, it would be nice to see that's what makes good people good and the rest of them not so good.
I mean, that's a big thing for me. If I will meet somebody like Mike and something like him and be
here they come.
Yeah.
Here they come.
But
you recognize that sound? That's the sweet sound of a Harley Davidson. Oh, I love that smell too. If you didn't guess by now, we're at the Charlotte Club.
Yeah. Things are picking up. But anyway, like, to meet a guy like that, to where he's super cool and genuine and, like, and does all that, like, it makes you even want to support him more. You know? So that's the biggest thing of it. So,
I agree.
I've met a lot of guys out there who are just kind of assholes. And it's like, just, well, not, I still like the music, but I'm not, probably won't be going to those many shows anymore. And,
I had a situation like that with one of my idols, a guy that I grew up idolizing.
Yeah, that's the worst one.
And we had the opportunity to open for him here in town, and he ended up being just an ass.
Yeah.
And it really soured me.
Yeah.
Like, really, man?
Yeah.
That's just, my image of him was shattered at that point.
Sure. Yeah, that's, I definitely have had those moments where you really look up to him, and then I maybe have some, you know, kind of image that you want him to be in your head, but when that gets crushed by the reality, and it's like, it's really heartbreaking sometimes.
And then I've met guys like Deep Purple, who we got the chance to open for. And, you know, these guys are, this is British rock royalty.
Yeah.
This isn't some crumb bum band.
Yeah.
This is British rock royalty.
Sure.
And we got a chance to open for them, and it's the only time that I've ever opened for a national act where I walked off the stage and the entire band was standing on the side of the stage to tell us what a good job we did.
Nice. Yeah.
And then after their set, got to sit around with them for another 45 minutes or an hour talking about fishing.
Yeah.
I talked to Roger Glover about fishing and about the fact that Chuck Berry played down the street from the pageant once a month.
Yeah.
And he couldn't believe that you could go and see Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
Every month, if you wanted to go.
Do you even know how to fish?
Who, me?
You.
A little bit.
Throw it out there. Wait for it in. Hopefully you reel something in. I don't know. But Roger Glover liked to fish.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Well, that meant you were going to like to fish for the night, I guess.
Yeah, I was.
My buddies, they got to open up for Slash and Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators one night. And obviously... growing up idolizing Slash and so to meet him, like, they were super thrilled to be on the same bill, and let alone, but they had dressing rooms like side by side, and Slash even came over and said, you know, talked to him and stuff, and I thought that was pretty neat that a guy even at his level and stuff is take the time out to come talk to the local support. And
you know, I we're local support acts, you know, but for somebody to take the time and do that, or do what these guys from Deep Purple did,
yeah,
you know, maybe they remember,
yeah,
what it was like,
sure, yeah,
you know, but trying, just struggling,
sure, and then that's, you know, there's you know, like, I think there's, you know, there's been times you impress them enough, maybe they'll say, hey, come with us, come on, let's, you know,
right,
come on the road with us, place.
You never know.
Yeah.
Your name's Bobby Schneck.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I haven't met Bobby Schneck, but I do know Junior, and he can shred too.
Both of them, two genuine people, two badass players.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
tremendous guitar players and really nice guys, both of them.
Right.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun watching Junior play a lot. And it's cool that he's now working the road with Devin and stuff. And
loving it.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think we'll...
Sounds like we're getting loud and getting run out of here.
Yeah. Look to wrap this up. But, yeah, come out Saturday night, 1860 Saloon, Soulard, Missouri.
9th and Geyer.
Same place you've been playing for how many years you've been down there?
How long have you been alive?
Alive, yeah.
and
then Friday night, May 15th,
yeah,
at the Bottleneck. Come out.
Sure. And... what do you guys got? Facebook looking
to
all the dates there.
The Tony Campanella Band.
Tony Campanella Band, St. Louis, Missouri. And then www.vtonycband.com.
Right.
Come and check us out.
Yeah. Throw a couple.
Thanks.
Hey, man. Nope. Thank you. We'll throw a couple tracks on here. You can hear the guys and come see them live and have a good time. So,
support live music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Local. Go. Yep. Do it now.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm feeling like I need a resurrection.